Welcome back to another Producer's Primer. We got Dylan in a different neck of the woods. Where are you today, Dylan?
Yeah, I'm in Lille, France, which is the northern kind of, where I'm like a just 20 minutes, I think, drive to the Belgian border where I'm at here. And I'm over here for a television festival, which has been so much fun. And I'm...
Yeah, you were pitching a series.
Yeah, pitching a TV show, which went really, really well.
Maybe you can't talk about it, though.
I can't give all the details right now, but it's really cool. Also, as I was telling you briefly offline, I just had, like, the finest, most delicious, delectable French lunch, fine French food with a friend here, and which was great. And I rented a bike and biked around the citadel of Lille, which is the old fortress that is right on the river that would have been, of course, to keep the Belgians or whoever was coming down the river at you. I have no idea. That would be a really interesting historical thing to look into. It is definitely we're at the cross, you know, it's kind of northern France, so it's really like it's a bit more crossroads, like borderish of, but who knows? Maybe it was built in 1952, but they just made it look like it's kind of like, you know, they just aged it up.
But made it look like it was from the 1600s or something.
It was like a tourism project. Like Tourism Lille was like, you know, what would really attract people is an ancient fortress.
Yeah, I feel like they don't really have to make up old things over there.
No.
Like North America, yeah, we're like, this is built 1910.
Hey guys, should we make world's largest Euro? Like, let's do that, you know, or something.
Yeah, exactly. So you just listened to the Michael Ippolito episode, which comes out in a couple of days on Monday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a great conversation.
Yeah, what'd you think?
Well... Oh, I should also mention that you're just kind of on the beginning of your day. I'm at the end of my day, and so people should have some grace for my jet lag and your waking up section of life here.
Yeah, I thought we were doing this an hour and a half from now,
and then you got my email that I sent at 2 a.m. I was like,
yeah, as I was waking up, like, oh, we're on in like 15 minutes.
Nice.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. man, it was great. I mean, I love listening to people who are really sharp, and both you and Michael were trading really sharp commentary on starting off talking about Roman history and how that reflects today's history.
Yeah,
and
that was fun.
Super fun section of the discussion. Yeah, like one of the things that really stuck out to me was this idea of you know, how empires and especially wealth inequality, that's something that he's really interested in and talks a lot about in your interview, and just that, like, that hope index of, like, where is the calculation in people's minds between, you know, taking action to make my life better is playing by the rules and being part of the society, or trying to break the society and, you know, bearing arms against... you know, or whatever revolution of whatever kind. It was interesting, really, really good. So kind of like corporate or shared norms versus breaking those norms as the way to see hope. And I mean, I'm in France, so I have a bunch of thoughts that are like very French related, actually, about that.
Like what? You mean like revolutionary stuff? Or?
Yeah. So, something I would recommend to listeners is there's a book called Capital by Thomas Piketty. Who do you know this book?
I've heard some people say Piketty, but
Piketty. Okay,
I've met the guy, so I don't know.
They're probably right.
I have no idea.
I heard a talk by him where he actually said that what inspired him to write the book was actually 18th century French literature, because in 18th century French literature, the characters on a regular basis, their goal is to marry into money. And he was actually looking culturally, like, at, you know, narrative carries a lot of information about, but like narrative carries a lot of information about what people are thinking about, what's important to them. And what he discovered was that all these characters in these novels are looking to marry into money, because essentially in France at that time, that is really the only way for you to ever improve your lot in life, is to marry somebody with money. So he was actually saying, like, they were studying. He started to do study by looking back at old bank records. You know, there's accounting documents from the 18th century that you can actually look at. And he did some study and found that, you know, somebody who wanted to get an education and become a doctor, you know, they might like fractionally move up their place in society. But the real goods were marrying somebody that came from a family with money, because essentially, uh-huh, if you had money, that money would create more money. And there was such a disparity. And I was just thinking about, you know, obviously that there's a reflection of that, I think, in our current mm-hmm, situation, where, you know, people are starting to sense that more and more. Like, if you have money, you're going to be okay. Your stocks are going to go up. Your house is increasing in value.
Yeah.
If you're not... if you don't have money, I mean, I actually have a friend who's an ER doctor, and he described how much, he's still doing pretty okay. We're not quite at that stage yet, but he the amount of student debt that he came out of university, out of his medical school with, was like shockingly high. Like, he was going to be working for 10 years as a doctor to pay off the student loan for so becoming crazy. A doctor. And yeah, so anyways,
I can't remember.
Really good book.
Yeah, I can't remember who said it, but there's this quote by this billionaire or something. And he says, if you have $100, it's very difficult to turn that into $110. If you have $100 million, turning that into $110 million is inevitable. And it really speaks at so many different levels of just the exactly what you're putting your finger on of how money works these days, but also just that frame of mind that someone in that position would have of just using that word inevitable. it speaks to that psychological component too. But bringing it to the conversation, Michael actually talks a lot about these long vol mindset or strategies, which he says of something like those YOLO call options, or buying a meme stock, or going all in on crypto, or whatever have you, that a lot of people are doing very, very similar things to, or thinking about similar things to what this same time period in France.
Right. It's almost like trying to get married. It's like, you know, what would you do?
Exactly.
You need to doll yourself up and go for the gold, you know, go to where the wealthy people are and try to like hope you get picked up. It's kind of like buying, you know, the new coin or something. You know, people might be like, oh man, is this going to be the one? I should put my money into that, because that, yeah, like that just makes actually more sense at some point. I thought your
thing.
Question so to Michael was really interesting. I won't try to describe his answer, but you ask him the question about what his doubts about crypto are. For somebody who's like, you know, in the space, working, really doing amazing work, Blockworks is a really interesting thing that Michael's creating.
You've got a cool vision, yeah.
He's clearly long on crypto, but that is a great question to ask somebody who's really into something. Like, hey, what are your doubts? And he describes about five really good points about like weaknesses, and I think that's worth listening to, because along the lines of what Bandy said and what you brought up was, to be sane, you have to have some doubts, because otherwise you're blinded by your own need for something to, you know, be utopian. So I thought it was brilliant. I think everybody needs to check that section out. That is like, yeah, that's what people need to watch.
Just yeah, it's
to
good.
Be
you
grounded.
Know, it was my first time being exposed to, he said something like he's thinking about it more of a trade instead of just this forever hold, and like that's where the future is indefinitely from a monetary or financial perspective. Mm. And he roots that in, if you look at historically sound money frameworks or sound money principles or sound money assets are never the thing to hold forever. They're for a period of time. And so he was kind of fleshing that out a little bit, which I thought was interesting, because a lot of these folks are like crypto forever, diamond hands, never going to sell, hodling, all this stuff. And he's like, well, there's going to be an end for that. And so I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
It seems like he's starting to change his mind around that.
Right. So does that mean, just because I think I need some help actually understanding that more clearly. So he's talking about something moving from the value of holding it because of speculation is driving it. Like the actual value that people are seeing, a lot of people are getting into crypto is for this, like for these massive swings. So that's actually like, that's a, what is that saying? You know, that's not a bug, that's a feature that people are hoping for, these massive volatility swings. But at some point, mm-hmm. it's going to mature, and it's no longer, that's not no longer the feature that you're looking for.
I can't speak to like why people are getting in, because I think there's a lot of different reasons why people are getting in. Volatility is just one of many.
Sure, fair.
But this idea that it's this savior of an asset almost, like there's an element of exactly that, like a kind of a savior asset. And at some point he's realizing, well, if it truly fulfills the narrative that it might be this hard asset, then if you look at historically, if you hold that hard asset during certain periods of time, you lose a lot of money. And so that's kind of his thing, is like, well, I don't necessarily want to hold it through a period where it's devaluing and everything else is going up in value, because, and it hinged upon his thoughts that, if you look at historically, we always leave those hard asset systems that like, does that make sense? And so at some point in the future, he's almost theorizing that perhaps we'll leave that system yet again to a more fiat or credit expansionary, just you can create as much debt or money as you want. And during that point, during this next cycle, 15, 20 years, I think he said something like that, then he'd want to be out of it or less in it or something like that. I'm putting more words into it than he, because it was a very short little thing he mentioned. So but it was something
to our
along
audience.
These lines.
Then we need to say, go listen to the episode. Me and
yeah,
Brad,
go listen to Michael.
We're building off of it. It's great.
Well, enjoy the rest of your time there.
Thank you. Thank you, Brad, for great talking to you, and can't wait to hear people's reactions to the show.
Yeah. Chat next week.
Okay. Bye, man.
See ya.